Hello and welcome to Open Mind UFO Radio. I'm your host, Alejandro Rojas, and this is kind of funny. Oh, and I should say I've got our guest, Martin the Silent Partner Willis. He's really good at being silent.
Yeah.
You're just because you're so good at it. Every time we start our Skype, you cannot hear me, and there's silence. So. It takes a couple of minutes and we get it all worked out.
Yeah, we figure it out.
But speaking of what you can and cannot hear, everyone will be hearing some noise in the background because we've got some new granite going in today. And there's just always so much going on that I got to keep rolling. Hi, chihuahuas. Oh. But let's see, what do we got today? Today's guest.
Yeah,
I'm very excited.
Today's guest. Right.
This is really cool. It's Jeremy Corbell.
Oh, yes.
So if you may have seen that. You know, he's got this Skinwalker, the Hunt for Skinwalker documentary coming up. And he just in the last couple of days has been posting about this on his website. And so we talked about what did this all include. And what he told me is amazing.
Wow. That place is amazing enough.
So I know.
I will have to tune in and take a listen.
And I want to tell people more about, you know, all of these cool things that he told me. It's funny because I'm sitting here trying to resist doing that. And, but, you know, I want to save it and let him reveal that in the show. But he gave me a lot of exciting stuff. And it's kind of funny because I haven't told you yet. And so I want to tell you, but you're going to have to wait.
Can't.
You're going to have to listen to the show.
Yeah.
So Skinwalker, I just am curious how would you explain what the Skinwalker phenomena, the Skinwalker Ranch is?
Well, it seems really odd some of the things that happened there. I read the book a number of years ago, and of course I've talked to John Alexander and a few other people about the happenings there. You know, I think the most interesting thing is when the supposed portal opened. When that thing crawled out, whatever it was, and never mind the cameras going out and all these weird things. And from what I understand, things are happening there again. But I think it's age old, whatever it is. It's been probably there for, you know, who knows, millennia maybe. That's kind of my thoughts on it.
Yeah, and just so people know, it's you know, in the Uinta Valley in Utah, and it's just this ranch where these people reported this strangeness, and Robert Bigelow, the billionaire we know that has been involved with the DOD project, he's the one who got the money to investigate the UFOs for the Department of Defense. He has been investigating that ranch with the National Institute of Discovery Sciences, also known as NIDS, for quite some time. And now we know through documents that George Knapp has shared recently that, you know, the scope of the DOD investigation included much more than just the UFOs, that actually was a later phase that Elizondo had, you know, refocus things on UFOs when earlier the Skinwalker Ranch was a big part of that, and all these other weird phenomena were a part of it. So very cool, crazy stuff. And so Skinwalkers are really important. I think there's going to be more news about all of this. I'm going to be trying to write something up soon about all of that background that's been coming out, and wild and wacky stuff.
Really is. I mean, some of the some of the things that have happened there are just so unexplainable and so strange. You know, the huge wolf and all kinds of that was shot. I think, didn't he shoot the wolf and nothing happened, no blood or anything?
Yeah, supposedly this big, large wolf, you know, came and was just, they thought it was kind of friendly and kind of wandered around, but I guess it was humongous. And but then it got near their kind of corral with their cattle, and it grabbed one of the cattle and tried to rip it out in between these things. So they started shooting at it, and I guess they were fairly close range, and they even saw, I think, chunks right. come off of this thing, and it didn't seem fazed, and eventually it kind of looked at them and ran away. So lots of strange, mm-hmm. scary phenomena that occurred, but no people, according to the book, and I've talked with Kelleher, the main science guy before, mm-hmm. And John Alexander, and according to all of them, no humans were ever hurt, even though, unfortunately, some of the cattle on the ranch did indeed suffer some pretty horrific fates.
Right. You know, I got to tell you, if I was that family that bought that ranch and all those things were happening, I couldn't have lasted 2 days there. Mm-hmm. they stayed, they hung in, and until they just couldn't take it anymore, you know. But still, oh my God, the things that were happening, I just couldn't take it. Yeah. I don't know how they did it.
Me either. Crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Crazy stuff. So yeah, so that's what we'll be talking a lot about, and what's in this documentary, and it's very shocking and very important. And it is new, even though we're talking historically, it's new in that we're discovering now what we didn't know before, which was the involvement of the DOD and the funding and everything that happened in that way. Mm-hmm. So really crazy, really cool. So otherwise, I just wanted to share, because this is really cool news, that, you know, my Den of Geek article, I wrote about, like I had told people, and we've talked about this, my interview with Scott Kelly, but they finally posted an interview on Den of Geek, and it blew up. It did awesome. So, you know, there were tons of hits the whole weekend. It was like the most popular article, even though Den of Geek, you know, writes about lots of really cool stuff, like all the hot stuff. They're writing about Westworld, and they get lots of scoops on the TV shows and the sci-fi shows and stuff like that. So it was really cool that that did really well. And there's been lots of discussion. And what's fun about this discussion is you see a lot of names and people in there that aren't the regulars. You know, they're not like the typical listeners of our shows. These are different. These are people who go to Den of Geek often. So it's kind of a different audience. So it's kind of fun to get in there and see what people are commenting. And of course, for our listeners who are a little more educated on this topic, it'll probably be fun for you all to go in there and make your comments. Being the sage and wise people who know quite a bit about this topic. And so that's always good.
Wow. You get a star in your forehead for that article doing so well. One of your very first articles there, right?
Yeah, it was my second article on that site. And now they're, of course, from what I heard, I don't know, the editor I work with is Chris Longo, who's really, really cool. Great writer, Den of Geek. I love this guy. He loves UFOs. He's read Open Minds. He's really excited about it and has been for a while. And he's kind of told me, oh, you need to come over and write for us. And so we finally came around to making it happen. And I'm loving it. But I guess some of the management were a little more hesitant. And now they're stoked because he was right. You know, he told them our people love this kind of stuff. They're going to love more space and science and UFOs. And sure enough, you know, he was proved right. So they're super happy with the both of us, and they want more of this, which is great because there's so much credible news that is coming about. And it's always fun to introduce all of this information to a new audience. And that's what's unique about the time we're in right now. There are more people open up to hearing more about all of this. And I think that's really important. You know, there's a lot of negativity, I think, in this field. Wouldn't you say? And I think that it's not necessarily warranted. I think right now is a great time when people are opening up to these topics.
Yes, unfortunately, I do see that as well. And you and I talk a little bit about that every now and then off air. There is some negativity. And, you know, who knows why? You do see some jealousy sometimes. You see people stuck in certain ways that don't want to, you know, advance any further and what their deal is. So, yeah, there can be, but it's still a very interesting topic, and it'll be good that you're going to be writing about it in a new forum where it's such a busy website, Den of Geek.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's one of the top websites in the country as far as activity goes.
Yeah, a lot of people looking at it. And I also did a little bit on their podcast, one of their podcasts. So they've got a couple. They've got one like called Channel Zero and Sci-Fi Fidelity. And I can't say I didn't neglect to ask which exactly podcast that would be on. But they have a podcast site specifically. So you can go to Den of Geek and click on the podcast button, and it'll be up there soon. And of course, you can follow me on social media, and I'll let people know once that gets posted. But yeah. Cool stuff. So, and they're a lot of fun. So, yeah, this is a lot of fun. And of course, I love engaging different people. And I love talking with skeptics. And, you know, I think that people like our shows because we're more positive. And if people are skeptical, that is completely fair. And I love to have their input and talk like adults and be mature about this, which is kind of a given in these circles. I don't know why so many people have problems with it. I guess it's just social media. But sure enough, you know, people are over there bashing on Scott Kelly and calling him a liar and all of these things. And
kidding.
Yeah, and you know what? I've got to go to several NASA sites, interview astronauts and NASA engineers and people, and they have some of the highest integrity. It's refreshing. It's fun. It's just such a positive environment, and there's so much positivity when you talk to these people, and wise. It's educational, and I put the link to Scott Kelly's discussion that he did that I got to see. It's hilarious. I mean, I highly recommend people go watch this video. You definitely will not regret it. So I have just a ton of respect for NASA and NASA employees, and I certainly do not get the slightest bit of sense of deception by any of these people. I think they're just sharing what they know, you know?
Are these people, like, saying that, you know, astronauts know something about, you know, ETs or something? Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's essentially what they're saying. And I don't know. I guess if you're not, and you know, I guess in their defense, they just got to take my word for it. They weren't there to meet Scott Kelly. They don't get to go meet these people. But I would say that, you know, go meet people. If you're into space and if you're into this topic, there are NASA scientists that do talks all around the country.
Right.
Many different states have NASA sites or work that's going on that you can go visit. Of course, every university has a lecture series where you can hear these types of people talking. Or go visit, you know, go to Johnson Space Center or Marshall or some of these places, which are fun, super fun to visit because they have rockets and they have all these cool things you can look at. They've got models of Bigelow's, you know, inflatables and moon bases and stuff. And you get to really find out what it's like and even talk to some of these people because they're open and they're excited about what they do. So go out and meet people, talk with people, because I think the more secluded people get, then the easier it is to not just get conspiratorial, but also kind of demonize people. And I don't think that's a positive atmosphere. The situation we have now where people are kind of feeling more open, that's when it's important for us to go begin and continue to engage people, because that's when we can get people to open up more, I think.
Right. I have a lot of respect for astronauts myself as well, because, you know, it just, they're such a unusual breed. It's like they're one out of, I don't know, one out of millions can actually make it to, you know, to that level. You know, they have the right stuff, so to speak. So they're...
Well, and a big portion of the right stuff, and this is something that is something I've learned in the last few years, that actually one of the highest priorities in choosing astronauts is a psychological profile, is people that can work with other people, people that are friendly. And that's why you see so many astronauts that are really humble and friendly and outgoing, because they've got to be able to... be team, you know, work in teams and, you know, be in secluded places for a long period of time with a few people. And that can be difficult. If you're stuck in this little pod with an a-hole, you know, that's going to be a struggle, and someone might not survive that experience. But if you're with your buddy, like if it was like you and I could probably, I wouldn't want to do just you and I. It'd be nice to have a couple more buddies, but we could probably, you know, make it to a trip to Mars and back and have a good time.
I think so. We made it through the conference. Charmingly well, actually.
I think so. And that can be a high stress environment because, of course, you were learning new things and you know, it takes a lot of your attention, but you did a great job.
Well, you did too under the stress. And I've run a number of events myself, and I've actually lost it a couple of times, you know, not on people, but I mean, you just get so stressed out when you have all these things go wrong. Sometimes that happens, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, let's get to some news. You got a piece of news you want to share with us?
I do. Speaking of NASA, NASA's actually sending a helicopter to Mars.
Mm-hmm.
So this came out on space.com. I actually saw something on the news about this. So NASA will include a small autonomous helicopter in the agency's upcoming Mars 2020 rover mission. The officials announced this on May 11th. The craft will undergo a 30... Now, I wonder why they're just sending one. I mean, what if one breaks? But anyway, maybe it's a space thing. You know, I mean, they can only pack so much. But this is a tiny thing. It's only about 4 pounds, 1.8 kilograms. So the craft will undergo a 30-day test campaign once it reaches the red planet to demonstrate the viability of travel above the Martian surface, the surface with a heavier-than-air craft. Now, this has to, the rotors have to actually turn about 10 times faster than they would on Earth because of the atmosphere is so thin there, and it's about the size of a softball. But it's going to be kind of like a drone, I would think. And the altitude record for a helicopter on Earth is about 40,000 feet. What does it say? I think it will be able to go up to, on the surface of Mars, up to 100,000 feet, I believe it is. So it's interesting. I think it's a great concept. And they will be able to actually, you know, cover a lot more ground and really look around, instead of, you know, slowly roving across the surface.
Yeah, so, that is really cool, this little helicopter. And so that's going to be interesting. And I guess it's a test, for a bunch of helicopters flying around out there.
So the future may, you know, maybe a series of so-called helicopter drones or whatever they're going to be called.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a cool story, I think. Really cool one.
And, of course, they're going to be looking for microbial life. I don't know exactly how. I think there's, it says something like 23 cameras. I don't know how it could be on such a small thing. The body of it's only the size of, like, a softball, it says.
Tiny little sucker.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, that's
so, and, of course, the weight on, you know, it says it weighs 4 pounds, but on Mars... what would that be? I don't know what the percentage is. But
yeah, I don't know. You can probably find that. But and that little softball thing must be a little control panel and mostly motor. And I guess I'll have to test. I guess it's got two. I think it's got two sets of propellers that go in opposite directions. So they'll be testing what, how fast they need to spin and stuff to go up and down.
Would you guess that? What would you guess something like that would cost? I mean, it just blows me away sometimes when I hear. Prices.
I would think if you went to Walmart, you could get one for maybe $40. But I'm guessing that NASA paid $2.4 million.
Yeah, I would say it's at least a million.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's softball. Weird.
Right.
Pretty funny. Mm. A couple other pieces of news. This is kind of cool. So that we talked about, you know, the Skinwalker Ranch, and of course, Jeremy and I will be talking about this more in a minute, but it was picked up. George Knapp, of course, wrote about this, about the DOD project, you know, and the history. Mm-hmm. And there were people like Paul Dean, and I think we talked about this before, and some other people, we mentioned them before, that had discovered some documents that alluded to this other earlier rendition of this investigation into paranormal, although they didn't know the scope, they found the name and at least a job posting on it. And then George Knapp shared a lot more, but it was picked up by the War Zone, the Times Inc. website, The Drive, Tyler Rogaway, who of course I had on the show a few weeks ago. So that's awesome. Breaking that news is kind of breaking into the mainstream. I want to write about it and maybe some others, and maybe we can kind of push this out there some more. But another piece of important news today, which is that NASA data from the 90s shows evidence of plumes from Jupiter's moon Europa. So, you know, Europa is suspected, it's this ice planet, to have some underground oceans. And now these plumes, they suspect, are evidence of under ice water. So, you know, more evidence for the possibility of life on Jupiter's moon.
And they may try to, plan a mission that will actually look for, you know, signs of life. I don't know, within the plumes. I don't know exactly how they would do something like that. But
yeah, that's one thing. Well, I guess one of the things that they can do is they can have a just from a satellite, from something to go there and fly around it, they can pick up in the atmosphere some of this oxygen, this water, and from these plumes, and then possibly look for microbes in it. So that's one easy way to go about this sort of thing. And then I've got a story actually on Open Minds I wrote a couple years ago about, you know, the research going into actually building a kind of a rover, but a robot. But this is something that digs. So they land it. And then it drills under the ice, and it's got cameras and stuff and can kind of go underwater looking for life and stuff like that.
So why did this why was this data not looked through, really intensely after, you know, the flyby and all that?
You know what? I don't know. That's a great question. And I think it just has to do with a lot of times, you know, this was data that was received from Hubble. So these telescopes and everything gather a ton of data, and they have to go through that data later on and look for it, that certain signatures in the data. So it just may have taken a long time, or maybe they weren't looking at it right earlier. So or some other technology that allows them to identify things they couldn't before. So it's probably in the story. The New York Times wrote it, and I have not actually read through the whole thing because it just came out today. But, we'll have to check that out.
Right.
Check it out, people. You can find it on the front page of openminds.tv. How convenient is that? And you can also find there a link to the Scott Kelly on Den of Geek. And then I also posted a short Scott Kelly story at openminds.tv where I included some of my pictures, because Den of Geek didn't, they only like use one picture per story. But I put several of my pictures of Scott Kelly right next to me, and then, doing his stuff. And then, of course, a link to that talk that he did. You got to check it out. You'll love it because he's hilarious. So it's really good stuff. Great. But we're out of time.
We are. Yes.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Martin.
You're very welcome.
And
fun as always.
Yep, always a good time. And we'll be right back with Jeremy Corbell, so stay tuned. Welcome back to the show. Very exciting show today. We've got Jeremy Corbell on the phone. Hello.
Hey, Alejandro. How you doing, man?
I'm doing awesome. And to start off, I just want people to understand, because I don't think they do, like how important it is that there's something new coming out about the Skinwalker Ranch. Because really, since George Knapp's book in 2005, and then the lectures that he did, I was lucky enough to see several, one of which was with Colm Kelleher, who, of course, we've talked about before because he works with Bigelow. That's like really it. There's been lots of speculation. There's been people going to the gate and the fence and looking through and everything. But there hasn't been anything real. But somehow you have gained unprecedented access. And how did this come about?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I think you are right. And I think it's real important, for people to understand that the information that came out of the ranch in the 20 years that Bob Bigelow owned the ranch, it was so small. And it was in the form of the biggest part was in the form of a book by George Knapp and Dr. Colm Kelleher. But the actual investigations and the NID studies and the bass studies and all this stuff that's in the news now that was going on at the ranch, the $22 million that helped fund all the studies at the ranch, it's been a mystery. So luckily, there's been a change of ownership. And with that change of the guard, a different regime, all of that information, this information George couldn't put out before. He wanted to make a documentary. But, that was squashed. They were worried that it was going to jeopardize the investigations. That archive, that Akashic record of footage during the time of active investigation at the ranch that George documented, that can now all come out. And so that's why it's kind of right place, right time, and a lot of pestering. And we were able to get this footage and all the new stuff, the years of new footage and investigation that I've been doing up there with George can now all come out too.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. And George is really good at kind of keeping things under wrap. As a journalist, you often have to do that. But he who knew really that there was ongoing investigation? I don't think a lot of people knew that.
Right. Look, his position was he was given the opportunity as a journalist to cover and follow and watch and document what was going on there. He wasn't trying to hold secrets, against anybody. He was actually mm-hmm. trying to collect the data so that when the time was right, this sort of thing could happen. We owe him a debt of gratitude for his perseverance over 20 plus years of documenting and keeping this story fresh and alive. So yeah, it's pretty amazing, man. People are going to see for the first time footage of the ranch, in the ranch, on the ranch, under multiple ownership, and they're going to see it in ways that we never expected the public was going to be able to.
Mm-hmm. Really? So yeah. Did you end up with more material and access than even you thought you were going to have?
Oh, absolutely. I wrote down my wish list of how this movie would play out, and not only did I hit every point on that wish list, but also beyond that, there are some surprises in the film that people are just going to be taken aback by. And I did not expect those things to happen. That's the great thing about a documentary, is that you really don't know what's going to happen until the final cut.
Mm-hmm. Now, how long has this documentary been in the works?
Well, you could say it goes back to George Knapp when he first started. He wanted to make a documentary, mm-hmm. but, Bob Bigelow and the scientific team and now, as we know now, the government involvement, nobody wanted that footage to come out because it would shine a bright light on the inside of Skinwalker Ranch. Mm-hmm. And so you could say it's been in development since then. But as I've kind of released those clips of me going through those archive boxes, the treasure trove, it's like Indiana Jones. You get to unearth these tapes that go back again like 20 years. That actively, this documentary actively has been in process for maybe 3 years. but really went into high gear when we saw the window of opportunity that occurred with the new releases, which all relate back to the ranch. Every road leads back to the ranch. The 22 million, the programs that everybody's aware of now, it all leads back to the ranch.
Right. So that's interesting. I guess I want to get into that because that is really very new information for the public that I think people haven't completely digested yet, which is one of the exciting things for you and I to talk about today. But I do want to get to essentially your experience. So how did you first come across the story and what was the impact when you did find out about this crazy Skinwalker Ranch?
Yeah, you know, I think like most of the world, I learned about Skinwalker Ranch through George Knapp's and Dr. Colin Kelleher's book. I think that's how most people were given access to understand in more depth kind of what was going on there at the ranch. So it was through my relation with George Knapp that I was really shown the goods when it came to the ranch, although a lot of it couldn't be public when I was learning about it. You know, I did get to see it from a unique perspective and through his eyes, and it really altered my position because when you hear these stories, when I read the book, it read like this great fictional account of something that might have happened. Then you meet the scientists who were involved during those investigations. You meet everybody who was hardcore involved in this who aren't necessarily public and out public about it. And you start to feel, wow, this story, these experiences are way more profound than I had first kind of given it credit. So this is why I think the film will really open the Pandora's box. I mean, it's your problem, eventually, the viewer, to deal with the fact that these events happened. And these events change the way that we look at the UFO phenomenon and the associated phenomenon. It certainly changed the way our Defense Intelligence Agency thought about the UFO phenomenon and the associated phenomena. They're related. The things that we observe at the ranch and the UFOs that are seen across the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's related.
So that is, I guess, getting back to what you were referring to before, which is this, how all roads lead to Skinwalker Ranch. And thus far, you know, we've heard about the Department of Defense and, you know, from Lou Elizondo investigating UFOs. And that isn't too far-fetched. For some people, you know, that's wow, quite a revelation. For people like you and I, it's not as big of a revelation. But to then find out that that some of those funds went to investigating this kind of paranormal ranch, that is really unique, and that is really different. And luckily, maybe for the better, that news has not really completely, you know, gotten out there or become a big part of the story, because this is so friggin' weird. I mean, that what goes on there is really strange.
Yeah, so the film really highlights those connections between, you know, the programs that have been popularized now, starting from the $22 million from Senator Harry Reid to the DIA's involvement. There have been major studies there. They're all connected. The thing that I think you're touching upon is that it is easy for the public to hear the words UFO investigation. You know, we get that. Unknowns in the air. People are familiar with ATIP. But again, there's something that has really not been clarified, and the movie will clarify it. So the hint to it is that $22 million that was created to study the phenomenon was really inspired wholly by Skinwalker Ranch and what Bigelow had been doing there privately with NIDS. So the DIA study of the ranch under Bass, that was wholly generated because of the 22 million because of the book Hunt for the Skinwalker and what Bigelow had done there for all those years with NIDS. I think that they're going to see, the public is going to see by watching this film, that connection very clearly, and that yes, our Department of Defense, specifically the intelligence organization within the Department of Defense, the Defense Intelligence Agency, they took this very seriously. They had to word the contracts in a way so they would be pushed through without much thought. And if you look at the BAS contracts, which I think George has made public, it's really clear that they're using these terms, you know, that allow people to push those contracts through. But the entire point of that $22 million was to study the phenomenon, this associated phenomenon with UFOs from a medical standpoint, from an observational standpoint, from a scientific standpoint. And it's mind-boggling. It's wild. But they took it very seriously. And not only did our nation take it seriously, but other nations did too.
And you get into that in the documentary?
In the bonus material.
Okay.
To the documentary. The movie is a beast. The movie is 2 hours and 7 minutes. And that's not the director's cut. That's like for the public. My first cut of this movie was almost 3 hours. I mean, it is a beast of a movie. So there are going to be five major bonus material pieces that accompany this film, which are quite revealing.
That's fun. I'm really interested too, because, you know, I'm a huge fan of your work. I've told you that, and every time you come on the show, because something that you really do is, you know, you take an intimate look into these individuals that are involved, but also the pacing. The pacing feels natural and right. And so did you have to kind of speed things up for this one to include more info?
You know, the pacing for this one, there's never a dull moment. That's kind of always my goal, is not to lose a viewer for even a second. So it should be visually aesthetic. It should tell the story, and it should be intimate and from a first person standpoint. And so I think I achieved all of those things in this film. So even with the extended length, the story has so many twists and turns. It's so deep. It's so profound. What you hear the individuals saying in this footage from the modern day interviews that have been going on for quite some time now. We've actually spent a lot of time, you know, me and the team in the Uinta Basin doing modern day interviews. We're just really quiet about it. But those interviews made it into this film. So you've got the modern day with all the way back to the NIDS investigations as they were happening on the ranch, as they were developing. So all of that footage is kind of pushed together. And I think the pace is strong for a movie like this that spans so many years. It's a highly entertaining movie. I think you won't be disappointed.
And so you were, how much of this film is footage that was shot way back when that you were able to get your hands on?
Gosh, you know, I'd have to say it is about 40% of the original footage, you know, from you know, starting back all the way from 1996 when Bigelow bought the ranch. And then, you know, I'd say 60% is new footage.
That is so freaking exciting.
I'm excited.
I didn't realize that. And that is so cool because, you know, this is a subject. When people read the book, I think that, you know, it's something that really changes people. I know you saw this recent article by Red Pill Junkie, our buddy online, and on the Daily Grail, I think it was on. And it, you know, he talks about that, how, you know, even though he's very skeptical minded, this is just so much happened here and there's so much credibility. It screwed with his brain. His brain is still twist every time he thinks about it. And I think that's how most people feel, just because it's so odd. But it seems like these things really occurred. So to hear that there's footage from back when all of this was being developed, that sort of insight alone, let alone the modern, you know, perspectives, that's a lot.
Yeah, what you're saying, you know, the credibility of this, again, I like to say it really is your problem. It's not, you know, it's the viewer's problem.
Yeah.
Because you have to, you know, kind of assimilate this data. It's beyond, looking at it as credibility. Our Defense Intelligence Agency thought it was credible. You know, George Knapp for 20 plus years thought it was credible. Robert Bigelow, who spent more money as an individual than anybody who owns an aerospace program, thought it was credible, thinks it's credible, knows it's credible. So the basis of his interview with 60 Minutes, where he says, I know that there are aliens, I know that they live among us, I don't give a damn, all of that is based upon his, you know, research and interest and work with our government at the ranch. So it's beyond credibility. These events happen, and you'll hear it directly from the witnesses who experienced them, because George was documenting that the whole way through.
Wow. So it's been really hard because, you know, I've interviewed quite a few people and had some shows and you know, on this topic, because it's a fascinating topic. And one of our YouTube videos that has done the best is when we talked to John Alexander, because a lot of the people involved with the investigation are hard pressed. I've even talked with Colm and just kind of baffled, hard pressed when you ask him what went on there. And I think that I love this statement by Alexander. You know, he didn't, nor has anybody really talked about aliens. So we'll talk more about that. But Alexander called it a precognitive sentient phenomenon.
Yeah, that's accurate.
I love that statement because it's intelligent, it outsmarted them, that's what they all say, but it seemed to be precognitive, it seemed to know what they were up to.
Yeah, as Dr. Colm Kelleher has said, it was a real fly in the ointment that it is not an easy way to explain it, saying it's aliens, right? There certainly are UFOs, hard physical craft, that occur in the Uinta Basin. Remember, the ranch is just a living laboratory in a hot spot, in one of the many hotspots on this earth that we know about. So the lab, the ranch itself, it's not that the ranch is a magical boundary line of property. It just happens to be a place that was conveniently a living laboratory in a hotspot. Now, the fly in the ointment is that, no, you can't just say it's aliens, because the phenomena that are expressed and, as Robert Bigelow would say, the performances that occurred on the ranch were so varied, they never exactly repeated themselves. So as scientists, that was very frustrating, because you can't look at something and just say, hey, repeat that result. It was always altering depending on the observation. I mean, it really is Schrodinger's cat of the paranormal. It was very wild. However, a lot was learned during that time. We might not be able to answer any of the questions that were originally, you know, set forward to answer. However, there are things that were learned from the investigations, and that's what I find really interesting.
Mm-hmm. So back when all this started, for instance, Harry Reid, did he visit the ranch?
Yeah, so I can't speak, you know, for him personally, but I know that it was his interest in the overall topic and the people that he associated with that really propelled him forward to help secure the ability for this study to ongoing and continue, and maybe even in more depth. It was not a sweetheart deal to Bob Bigelow. That is just utter nonsense. Bigelow lost money. The reason they picked him was because he had the lowest bid. He was willing to put the most of his own money into it. Mm-hmm. So it was really, it's really funny. You know, everybody's looking for a big conspiracy, a big money conspiracy. No, you've got a guy like you and me who's so fascinated by this and figures that it, with the right resources, he can find some answers. And sure enough, he tried. And he put everything, bare no expense. He did his best. They had a lot of people involved. Who were, you know, really great individuals to have involved. So I don't know. Harry Reid, his personal interest in this topic, I think George has covered that to the degree we can, which is, you know, he finds it very credible. Mm-hmm. And he has reasons, like any individual would, why he thinks that.
Mm-hmm. Were there DIA guys that visited the ranch? I guess, were there government and or military that visited the ranch during this period of time?
Yeah, I don't think that's really a secret at this point. Mm-hmm. That, you know, BASS was a DIA program, period.
Mm-hmm.
So the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating. I mean, one of the reasons it's fascinating is I've been, you know, really close in that I talked to George on a regular basis. I was part of MUFON when Bigelow approached MUFON, and I was on the board and everything. So, but I never knew all of this other stuff was going on. And right. that's not a complaint whatsoever, because I, you know, even as a journalist, when things are embargoed, you can't share them. Even you and I as researchers, or, you know, you working in journalism or as an investigative reporter, there are things that we're told that we can't share. And so it speaks to our integrity, and that's how we work with others when we don't share those things.
Yeah, and, I mean, for 2 years I was on the Tic Tac story talking with the primary witness, and, you mm-hmm. know, I had no way to shield that individual from the information getting out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I helped to encourage to make sure that information did come out. But yeah, I got a tip, worked it for 2 years, had to do it quietly because of respect. So I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. So, I mean, and to me though, that, I mean, I see that as a positive thing, whereas, you know, that speaks to their professionalism of all these people we work with, because I know, you know, they've occasionally shared things with me. But to many, though, that's what's frustrating, I guess. It's not a positive thing. They see secrecy and they see conspiracy. So, for instance, if we get to Bigelow, all of these negative aspects or things that say that are really negative looking for conspiracies with Bigelow, I think that they have not listened to what he personally has to say or paid attention to his actions. Because you said, you know, I've said this before too, he's like us. He's interested in this stuff. And so he's putting his resources towards it.
Yeah, we owe a big debt of gratitude for what Robert Bigelow has done behind the scenes to help get towards, you know, UFO truth by working with, you know, government agencies to his own personal endeavors, like NIDS was a wholly private endeavor. You know, people, they don't like secrecy. Well, they should get off their butts and start to bring information forward and seek it rather than sitting behind a computer screen waiting for everybody else to tell them the news. I really don't have sympathy for that. I think that when people say, well, that shouldn't be held secret, well, then they have never been in the position where they're allowed to be part of looking at something with the agenda of bringing it out when the appropriate time comes. And that's exactly what George did for, you know, 20 plus years. And luckily that's what I'm able to do now. But, you know, that it's a shameful thing. You know, people that you know, complain like that, well, they should get off their butts and start doing research.
Amen, brother. So we're already at the end of this first segment, so we've got to take a break. For those of you who are listening on KGRA, of course, you're going to hear some commercials here. Definitely patronize some of these great people who are doing shows or helping to keep KGRA on the air. Also, for those of you listening to the podcast, you'll have a short musical interlude, and then we will be right back with Jeremy Corbell and talking about the Skinwalker Ranch. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. We are back. You're listening to Open Mind UFO Radio. I'm your host, Alejandro Rojas, and we're here with Jeremy Corbell, the creator of the new documentary Hunt for the Skinwalker. Now, when is it coming out, and where will people be able to see it?
Well, it will be coming out late summer, hopefully sooner the better, but that's where we're at right now, is late summer. I'll be finding the exact date within the next week of when it will be launching and available. I'm sure pre-orders will be up on iTunes soon. You will be able to see it everywhere, and that's all I can say right now, but mm-hmm. you will be able to see it everywhere. Main point is it will be available for like pre-purchase with all those bonus materials pretty darn soon.
Mm-hmm. And you just released, I think even today was the first day, or maybe it was yesterday, this amazing poster. Is this what the cover of the movie is going to be, or a poster that was promotional?
That's the movie poster you'll be seeing on all digital platforms where it's available. That's the one. I love it. This wolf coming out of the ground looks like rocks with the actual Homestead 2, which is a site of high activity.
Wow.
At this paranormal ranch, high activity at Skinwalker Ranch, on top of the wolf's head. It's pretty wild. It's from actual images taken out at the ranch.
Oh, wow. It is so flipping cool. This poster is amazing. So getting back to now, very few people, of course, if you want to know more about the ranch, you got to read the Hunt for the Skinwalker or wait for Jeremy's film. Definitely check out the film. But I guess just for those few people, because there's going to be a handful of listeners, even though I cover this topic quite a bit, who aren't aware. So maybe you can, in a nutshell, as much as you can, describe. You've probably been asked to do this because in media often, you got to go do pitches and they're like, what's the nutshell? What is it? What is this about? What do you tell them?
It's, actually, Alejandro, you're the very first interview that I'm doing. I delivered the film yesterday in its full form, but I can wrap this up in a super simple way for people to look at. So what is nice. Skinwalker Ranch, right? So based on this best-selling book by George Knapp and Dr. Kellum Herr, they had a book out, Hunt for the Skinwalker. This that I'm putting out, it's a documentary kind of relating to this book, but it's really about the ranch, and it's the most intensive, scientifically studied paranormal hotspot in human history. That's what this ranch is, and that is definitive. It's famous now all throughout the world because of the myriad of like strange and frightening encounters and things seen at this ranch. Everything from motherships and UFOs to seemingly paranormal events. This has been happening for hundreds of years in the Uinta Basin, but the ranch itself seems to be a hub for this, a hot spot within a hot spot. There's animal mutilations, current animal mutilations, not just 20 years ago. It's happening to this day for local ranchers. Again, there's poltergeist-like activity. There's creatures. That's the thing about the ranch. It's really strange. Dimensional portholes. A physicist and another scientist watched this being crawl out of an orange dimensional porthole looking through night vision goggles while they were kind of on the hunt on the ranch to observe and figure out what this stuff is. The phenomena that's expressed at the ranch is so astounding, and it is about UFOs, but it's about associated phenomena. This ranch was owned by Robert Bigelow, aerospace mogul of Bigelow Aerospace, has an interest in the subject for a long time, and he deployed PhD level scientists. Millions of dollars of equipment and personnel was invested in this. And then the U.S. government's Defense Intelligence Agency took notice and sponsored a massive study to determine what lurks at this ranch, to see if it was a national security threat. So secrets have been kept, big secrets, about this ranch, and for more than, I'd say, two decades. And everybody's wondered what's going on there. We don't have photos. We don't have videos. This has been embargoed, this information. All of that has changed. And this story can now be told, and it will feature original and rare footage from the ranch during the time of investigations. That's how I can best explain it.
Mm-hmm. And you're the guy. A lot of people, I think, would be asking, why you? Why this Jeremy guy?
That's like what my mom asked. Well, I don't know. It's like that coveted a position. It's a difficult thing to get a movie like this out. It's highly stressful. But no, I think it was – look, George Knapp has been a mentor to me in journalism. And over those years, I have been able to witness and look at some of what he has been looking at for decades. And this was something that really, you know, the timing was right. The change of the guard. Nobody else could have done this but George Knapp. And luckily, as a filmmaker, there I am, ready to do this film. So it was, I you know, consider it luck, but it's like being in the right place at the right time, but also I was ready for this.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And, you know, I can see it because I'm a huge fan of your work, and that's what makes it so exciting. I'm excited about even if you're going to, whatever mundane little thing you do, you focus on, because you do such a great job, I think, in making anything interesting, but let alone something that is just, you know, intuitively amazing. This ought to be great. But I'm curious, was there an incident in particular that stands out to you and or that you really focused on that was maybe meaningful in the documentary?
Right. You know, there's so much to cover in a documentary mm-hmm. like this. And we're all looking for the evidence. You know, what is evidence? Is witness testimony evidence? You know, what types of documents are evidence? So for me, in this film, I really tried to make sure that all the work that George did and he filmed, that all of that could be told in these like news segments where he's reporting to you through all those decades, but then also tying that in to the current modern day situation at the ranch. Now, people are going to learn a lot from this film. I think it's going to be very hopeful. I think that they're going to be very encouraged. And I think personally, going there a multitude of times and having my own ability to experience this property and the surrounding area, the most profound thing to me is the way that this high strangeness is accepted by the local culture and how it's a part of everyday life and how they won't readily, the locals won't readily just talk to people about it because it is so outside of our consensus reality that they don't feel like they need to explain themselves to anybody. But when you earn their trust, and we were the first crew ever to get permits from the Uinta Nation, it's a sovereign nation, to film at these locations on the reservation and take that footage off for a movie. We were the first. It's not like when Joe Rogan was out there and he's standing on the peripheral of Skinwalker and not even close and does some stupid show about it that tells you nothing, mm-hmm. right? This is a hardcore, deep, long-term investigation, a multi-generation investigation. So I really am proud of this movie. I think people are going to love it. I think it's going to be entertaining. I think it's going to be highly, highly informative.
Mm-hmm. You know, and you bring up a great point, and John Alexander brings up this point often as well. And I think that's what's going to be different and about this film and why this is important, which is a lot of, you know, people have heard about this, maybe read the book. And so they decide they're going to shoot a documentary and they're going to include it or an episode of this show or that show. And they do just what Joe Rogan does. They go, they stand outside the gates. Maybe when the lights go down, you know, the sun goes down, they walk around it with their night vision outside the gates for a little while. And of course, nothing happens. And like John Alexander was noting, you know, things would happen, but it was far and few between. So the chances of you going there and even spending a few days and having some sort of paranormal experience are low because, you know, even if a dozen occurrences happen in an entire year, that's a big deal. That's a lot of occurrences. And so you have to really delve in, like you said, like nobody has ever done before.
Yeah, you know, this place is a paranormal Disneyland, man, and it's like saying you went to the gates of Disneyland and you stood outside. You didn't ride. You don't know what the Matterhorn is like. Mm-hmm. You don't know what Space Mountain is like. So yeah, and it's funny. Some of the things will be revealed, like some of the people that were invited to come with me and George one time, who you'll see in the film. A buddy of mine. He turns to me. It's middle of the night, Skinwalker Ranch. It's like 2 a.m. We're walking through Homestead 2, and we are alone. And he turns to me, and he says, you know, this is like hunting for the proverbial paranormal needle in the haystack. we're here for a weekend. And the NIDS team spent 7 years day and night and had 100 incidents over 7 years day and night.
Mm-hmm.
100 incidents. And I said, yeah, it's the proverbial paranormal needle in the haystack. I
mean, right.
It's really funny. Yeah, you can't be a fly-by-night person to get the real story. You can go outside the gates and bother the people that live there, which is really stupid to do. But I mean, you can do that and get a cool little YouTube video, but that is not an in-depth investigation that is, again, multi-generational and multi-decade. And that's what I'm hoping to present to people in this film.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in a different point. Yeah.
And I think what I hope happens, and it may, is that, you know, Area 51, for instance, is huge. I mean, it's everybody knows this term and this idea. That's George Knapp. Really, he gets, to me, of course, he was covering Bob Lazar, but he's the one who was brave enough to go out and share that information. The book made a big splash, but of course, we're a visual. That's how we kind of consume information these days, is the visual. And that hasn't happened. We haven't had this documentary. Like you said, George has been trying to make it. And now that it comes out, you know, yeah. Skinwalker, the ranch may go Area 51, which would be great. And it would be, I think you're the right person to be able to help do that.
Oh, absolutely. You know, for better or for worse, this movie has been picked up for mass distribution. The eyes on this from outside the UFO, the paranormal world, just everyday modern day citizens of the world. This is going to have so much viewership. I always make the joke, you know, Skinwalker Ranch is the Area 51 of the paranormal. And it's true. It has been so secret. It has been so held tight. The cards have been held tight on this one. It's all about to come spilling out. And it's going to come spilling out in grand fashion. Everybody's going to be able to see this movie. The audience size is going to be hugely increased, again, for better or for worse. But people are going to learn the real story about Skinwalker Ranch. Big questions, disturbing answers. I mean, it's true. So, yeah, it's going to be great, man. You mentioned Bob Lazar. I just want to say, man, I'm putting this movie out, and it's coming out soon. But definitively, my Bob Lazar movie will be available in December, at the end of this year. There's no change in that timeline. So another 30-year story, one that I personally want to know, the story I've always wanted to know more about. That is coming out. I'm making that documentary full in, all in. Bob Lazar is 100% behind it. It is an approved, definitive documentary.
Yep. Exciting. Very, very exciting stuff. Now, I guess my question would be this. There were some incidences where, for instance, animals were hurt. Like you said, cattle mutilations. Yes. Your cover or your artwork kind of harkens to this event where this giant wolf kind of came out that the ranchers saw and tried to eat one of their cattle, tried to rip it through the gates there, through the bars. But at least in the period of time that I've heard about, and in the time of the book where the book was written, no people were ever hurt, scared out of their wits, but not physically harmed. Is that still the case?
Yeah, absolutely correct. There's a lot of myth and rumor, and that happens when you keep something so locked down. The ridiculous story about alien firefights and all this weird stuff at the ranch never happened. Definitively garbage information. But it's easy to insert. This is why Bob Lazar is coming forward again with me after 30 years, because it's easy to insert your own fantasy unchallenged about things when you don't have an accurate account out there about what happened. So that's what this is going to do. It's going to push away the rumor, bring in the truth, and the truth is stranger than fiction. No humans have been hurt. I mean, psychologically, absolutely. I mean, it's terrorized people. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say the effect, because like you said, although they haven't been physically harmed, everyone I've spoken to who, you know, was part of the investigation, was affected psychologically. I mean, did you run across a lot of that? And how affected were people that you talked to?
Yeah, I mean, there are some very dramatic moments in my film that were unexpected. And you will see that. I mean, maybe even I underestimated the impact that, you know, can be had when people engage the phenomenon. These are close encounters. Let's be really clear. People talk about close encounters. This is close encounters. You don't get any closer than this. The events at Skinwalker Ranch and at the Uinta Basin, these are close encounter experiences, both UFO and something else, an intelligence that we don't understand that's related to UFO. So it really expands your understanding of ufology. It expands your understanding of what it is we might be looking at, why our government was assessing it as a threat, why they thought there were things that could be gleaned from it, both for space-time travel, dimensional wormhole stuff, but also the idea of, is it a threat? I mean, those are big questions. So I think that people are affected on two levels. I think on one level, there's a total reorganization of how you see yourself in the world and what the world is. So that's one version. It's not negative. It's just the version of saying, wow, I need to really change the way I look at the world and what reality is. And that's a psychological effect. Mm-hmm. The other psychological effect can be that you see or encounter something that you can't handle. And that has been a detrimental thing because, you know, it has been said there are hitchhikers in this type of experience. Things can follow you home. This is something that is commonly talked about even within in defense intelligence circles about the ranch. And that will become made be made clear in my film, but that is a term that is used, hitchhiker.
Interesting. And we do know, especially from George Knapp's recent story about Skinwalker, the ranch, and its involvement and in the DIA or Pentagon investigation, that people were concerned about this research for religious reasons as well.
Yeah, there was a contingency, and actually Harry Reid talked about that in one of the reports that he was featured in by George Knapp. Which is that, yeah, there was a contingency of religious individuals within the Defense Intelligence Agency that thought the study of this was essentially invoking demons. Hmm. And that, you know, UFOs or these beings or creatures, that this was demonic in nature, and they tried to, and maybe in some areas, successfully squashed some of the research. But look, it's just like, If you go to a pool party, you know, there's going to be people that are highly religious and have certain fundamental ideas there too. So I don't see it as that bizarre. But when it starts influencing the threat assessment of our nation, then I think it is important to look at it and say, you know, is this right? But yeah, there was and is a contingency within the Defense Intelligence Agency that is highly religious and believes that this type of study is studying something that is demonic and shouldn't be done.
That's really fascinating. Now, with the New York Times story that came out in December, it puts a lot of pressure on the DOD and the DIA to speak to this issue. And they haven't been necessarily consistent or clear in doing that. In fact, they've been very quiet. If your film takes off like, you know, it should, do you have any sense of how they may react? Have you gotten any trepidation or communication on that end thus far? Have they told you, like, just please don't do this?
No, there's been no restrictions put on my film in any way. In fact, it's been informed from some very interesting angles. I think that everybody is looking at it the same way. They're eager to see what's contained within the film. I do think that there is obviously some people who were part of this endeavor who want this information out. And I think that the intelligence community will obviously, you know, be interested to see the film because they were part of this study. They were part of this investigation. I also think that the releases that we saw from the New York Times and whatnot, that, yeah, people are confused because, look, out of three different spokespersons for the Pentagon, there were only two consistent statements. They literally read from a script, and they told us two things when questioned, both of which were lies. For example, they said that the study ended in 2012. That is a lie. That is incorrect. There's a difference between one funding source drying up and a program ceasing to exist. So they have taken a position. They probably don't even know the truth, these spokespeople. They don't even know the truth. They don't even have the right name when they're talking about ATIP. So they obviously don't have all the right information, or they're being given the goods to sell to us and their lies. So it's really interesting. Half of, you know, some people want this out, some people don't, and we have to sort out what's real and what's not real. And it's a tough job, but thank God the UFO community has really a voracious appetite and really good investigators, people that won't back down and will look for this information. Mm-hmm. I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, not only the UFO community, but I mean, the public is really interested in this stuff. Yeah. Even if they're quiet about it and kind of shy about it, you know, they're clicking and they're watching the videos and reading the stories and everything.
What a year for UFOs. I mean, yeah. They said 1969, the government study of UFOs stopped, and then we all of a sudden find out that's not true. And right. Not only do we find out that's not true, we find out that there's probably more going on than just the little ATIP program, the tiny little ATIP program, that there's probably a much bigger program. Yeah. And so we're going to learn more about that soon.
Well, we're out of time. Thank you so much. This is incredible. I mean, not only is this it's an event. I mean, it's something that is going to generate a lot of activity for years to come, no doubt, and things for us to talk about and interactions at higher levels. This is really important stuff. So super excited, very excited you're the guy doing this. Congratulations. And thank you so much for coming back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me on, Alejandro. It's always a pleasure. And yes, I'm very excited. This year will be very big. And Hunt for the Skinwalker, the movie, it's going to be a watershed moment where people get so much more information that they can then begin to understand the story from. So I'm really excited that the public can now engage this information.
Thank you so much to Jeremy for joining us today. I mean, I don't know about you, but I am extremely excited for his documentary, Skinwalker. If you're not aware of Skinwalker, I know we kind of glossed over a lot of stuff because we assumed people were aware. If you're not aware, you should be, because it's an amazing case. A lot of people would agree it's just one of the most amazing. So if you want to kind of get up to speed, check out that Daily Grail that I had talked about by Red Pill Junkie. Also, check out the book, Hunt for the Skinwalker. I think you can find it definitely on Amazon and in any bookstore. But it's an amazing case, and it'll make you that much more excited for this new documentary. And, of course, George Knapp's right in the middle of it. So if he's involved, you know it's going to have amazing stuff. You can also go to Extraordinary Beliefs to find out more about Jeremy and his work. He's got a lot of really great documentaries. And, of course, that's when you're going to find out when you'll have the Bob Lazar thing ready and everything. Speaking of amazing stuff, you should check out UFOCongress.com. The store has new amazing products. So some of the t-shirts we had this year were so cool. Eric McFarlane, our odd artist, who I'm a huge fan of, did some incredible stuff, and we have some, we printed a ton of t-shirts so we can have some extras, so check that out. Otherwise, thank you to Caleb Hanks for the opening and close music. Thank you to Systematics for the bumper music. And thank you to Martin of Podcast UFO for joining us for the news. And of course, as usual, thank you, the listener. And until next time, adios, muchachos.
ship.